Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I'm pleased to be back with you, and as usual, I'll start the programme with this week's update from Sheldon Nidal for the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. This week, he is continuing the story about the different craft that are used by the Galactic Federation, and they're talking also about how from their craft they see the amazing life form that is Mother Earth, and tells us that we are all part of a living conscious universe. He says that physicality may seem real to us, but Mother Earth is only a constructed figment of our collective imagination and the grace conferred by heaven. And he goes on to talk about the triune Godhead, that is the creator, and best expressed by the decrees of Lord Surya, and that these have given us the means to victory and are allowing us in the Galactic Federation of Light to complete the last components needed to effect first contact. I believe that the mention of Lord Surya, whose other half is Lady Surya, are what we would call the gods of this galaxy. I've heard of other names given, but there you are. That's what I think they represent, in case you haven't come across those names before. Sheldon's message goes on to talk about how when we look up and see the flickering lights of the night sky, that we should know that we played an important part in their coalescence, and that our potential power within knows no bounds. He goes on to say that all of us are kin, and in talking about the first contact again, he says that the timings and revelations are being revealed daily, all leading to a moment that is the instant of first contact. He goes on to talk about those on our world who have chosen to represent the dark side, and that they are also divine actors playing their assigned roles. He says that their roles in this drama were given to them to help wake us up and come together as a people. One has to say, what is going on the Earth today and has been going on for some years now, I think has certainly achieved that, and we're now beginning to see the response to it, which is becoming very widespread. He talks of preceding this special moment of first contact with new concepts of physics, mathematics, religion and biology, and talks about the present path chosen by our leaders, which are fraught with peril, and says that our future seems in doubt. Yet all of this is merely a scary prelude to a dramatic shift towards the light. He says your history is littered with such moments. The difference is that the present one is taking place on a global scale, and that this prelude began around 2 decades ago, and the moment of truth is now being reached. He also says that there is a growing awareness in all sciences that the core of its beliefs is founded on erroneous assumptions, and that these have coloured their observations and produced the babble of theories unable to comprehend the myriad workings of creation. And that although these theories have produced some wondrous technologies, they have been incapable of solving the many dilemmas they so unwittingly caused. Goes on to say that around you, disciples of a new science and believers in a new religious way have cropped up, and that these correspond favourably to the innovators that change, or the change, rather, your localized societies in the past. Here we must stress has he done globally? And he goes on to say, it is these ones referred to who are preparing you for a vast sleep in your consciousness. Your final stages of enlightenment need to be done in rapid gulps, and we are now busy doing this. He says that the absolute key to creating a far better reality is full consciousness. And he says, in this mode, the present world of duality is transcended and then swiftly replaced by a world of endless possibilities. He says, you can also join us in the wondrous exploration of physicality and discover the marvels that constitute our universe. As you can see, the world ahead of you is still hazy, but it is just starting to come into view. And as the focus becomes clearer, events can manifest that are meant to shift your world. And I'll finally quote from this week's message by saying that there is reference to our return to full consciousness, and it is confirmed that it is decreed by heaven and especially by Lord Surya. And we are to take this knowledge and use it to empower ourselves and to be ready to do whatever may be asked of us when the magic moment begins by first contact, when it manifests before us. I think that's wonderful. I think there's a lot of people that already have in their mind volunteered their services to the space people and are ready to apply their own skills and their time to helping when this great event starts. So that's wonderful. Now I'll quickly do a review of my messages since last Saturday, trying not to spend too much time on them because I believe it's possible that the people that listen to this program may have subscribed to the messages anyway. But last Saturday I had Saint Germain, and he was explaining that the ETs, known as the Greys, are the only off-world visitors allowed to contact us, and they were allowed to establish bases. Otherwise, visitors to this planet are vetted by the Galactic Federation, and the only ones allowed to come and not have bases here, but possibly on scientific type of visits, are not allowed to interfere in any way with our normal life. He goes on to talk about ascension and tells us that there is no choosing as to who advances to ascension. And that is something you desire and work to yourself. Although once having made that decision, you will be given every help to achieve it. He talks about how we must be careful when we're on the road to ascension to make no judgment against other people and to see the light in every soul. And then there is reference to karma and wrongdoings and confirmation that in putting these right through karmic law, that there is no punishment by God. On Tuesday, I also had Saint Germain, not having made a message on the Monday, and he was saying that our freedom of expression is a right that we have. He goes on to talk about our lives and how these carry us into circumstances or opportunities that are for our evolution, and that we should keep our eyes open for such opportunities and make sure that we keep them. He basically said that you must love your fellow man as yourself. And then he went on to ask us, what do you seek whilst upon earth? And to achieve what you seek, to accept any opportunities that came along which allowed you to progress. on Wednesday. I had Salusar, and he told us that the dark are architects of their own downfall, and said that no one is beyond the laws of the Supreme Creator. There was concern about the oceans affected by pollution and weather changes, which he said are affecting the Earth's balance. And after first contact, they will clear up the problems with the ecological system, and they will do that extremely quickly because of the vast resources that they have. And he confirmed something we've been told now many times, that it is time for first contact to occur. On Thursday, I had my only Arcturian called Elar. And he was speaking about the temples of crystal on Arcturus and telling a story of when they meet inside these temples and they sit in a circle, and in the center is a column of light, and through this they can bring in higher beings, and that these beings are able to extend their own aura, or shall we say their own light, so that it encompasses all of the people there. He also mentions that they have such areas on board their spacecraft. He talks about their life, where it is different to ours, and tells us that they mainly live on energy, that there are some occasions when they have some liquid nourishment, which he calls their nectar, and that they do occasionally take small inputs of solid material, but when they eat, such as you can call it, that is simply something they do for their sheer enjoyment. He mentions various aspects of their life and confirms that they have no need for physical exertion at their levels, that the jobs of that nature are carried out by robots or by their computer programs, so that there is ample time to spend on their own particular pursuits or their work, and that sounds very nice to me. He mentions that there are millions of galaxies and life is abundant all round. And he was talking there in terms of our joining these friends of ours from the stars when we too will have the opportunity to travel far and wide. On Friday I had my only lady ET, who is Diane, and she was likening springtime on Earth to how the seed of the soul suddenly starts to grow in the light. And she told us that they see us as children of light. And although we are called children, we are in fact old souls. She asked light workers to try and bring calmness to those upon Earth that are still in the dark, because they are lost and confused, and they would benefit from the help of those that are able to tell them what is really taking place, those who are aware of the truth. She asked us to tell them about the cleansing that is taking place, so that they are aware of the reason for the changes. And the message is concluded by telling us that the Creator promised we would be lifted up again after we completed this cycle of duality, and that we came into it with complete faith because of that. And that's all I'm going to say on my own messages. what I would like to now do is to move on to what I call my UFO article. And I found one very interesting. It was originally written by Roberto Pinotti. And at the time it was written in 1966, he was a member of the Italian Centro Studi Pipiologici, which I guess is some thing that means the Central Studies for Flying Saucers, because I don't know what Italian is in actual fact, but that can't be far away. And he headed the article, Space Visitors in Ancient Egypt. I thought that was interesting because in my mind I had memories of many years ago having read about some references in the ancient Egyptian history that referred to vehicles that are certainly described in a way that would make them seem to appear similar to what we see today. The article refers to the third month of winter of the year 22 at the sixth hour of the day. And it reads that the scribes of the House of Life found that there was a circle of fire coming in the sky. Though it had no head, the breath from its mouth had a foul odour. One rod, which is about 150 feet long, was its body, and one rod wide, and it had no voice. He goes on to say that now, after some days had gone by, behold, these things, which they now call the fire circles, became more numerous in the skies than ever. They shone more than the brightness of the sun and extended to the limits of the four supports, which means the quarters of heavens. They say that it was after supper. Thereupon, these fire circles ascended higher in the sky towards the south. Then, fishes and birds fell down from the sky, a marvel never before known since the foundation of Egypt. There is reference then to some well-known translation of a badly decayed papyrus, which was found still untranslated, with many others dating from the Middle Kingdom. And it was amongst the papers of the late Professor Alberto Tully, who was a former director of the Egyptian Museum of the Vatican. His brother, Monsignor Gustavo of the Vatican Archives, had allowed Prince Boris de Rakkerville, one of the world's leading Egyptologists, to translate it. And so the papyrus, which begins with a broken-off section relating to some other prodigy, could be identified as part of the royal annals of the pharaoh Thutmose III, who we believe reigned from 1483 to 1450 BC. He says that this ancient writing, showing clear and impressive evidence of the presence of UFOs in the past, reveals that unknown objects with the same characteristics of the so-called flying saucers of today were often seen in the skies of Egypt in those days. In fact, this papyrus says that there is a clear hint of some other occurrences, which was then recorded in the papyri of the House of Life, and it is stated that mysterious fire circles became more numerous in the skies than ever, evidently implying that such events were not new for the Egyptians. The writer speculates that if extraterrestrial creatures visited our planet in the past, and if, as some savants are now beginning to suspect, most of our religions and mythologies were really originated by the deification of ancient space visitors who came down among men in far-off times, as a matter of fact, all our religions and mythologies state that mankind was ruled at first by divine beings from heaven, in other words, from the sky. And also the Holy Bible, as far as the Judeo-Christian scriptures are concerned, produces in Genesis chapter 6 verse 2 irrefutable evidence of the existence of these mysterious, as they are called, sons of the gods. He mentions, by the way, that Elohim is a plural term, and its real meaning is not God, but gods. And he goes on to say that they and the 200 fallen angels called watchers in the Coptic Book of Enoch and Gregori in the Slavonic Book of the Secrets of Enoch, who came down among men in the days of Jared to mate with the daughters of men and rule the earth, are evidently the same. I move on a bit in his story, and then he starts to talk about Egyptian myths and the fact that a flying vehicle existed. It was the so-called Eye of Horus, often referred to in several ancient texts, such as the Book of the Dead, and which was always represented as a winged circle with all the characteristics of the winged sun disk worshipped in other parts of the world. As a matter of fact, in the Book of the Dead, it is written, "My name is Horus, and I am from the Eye of Horus." And he jumps on a bit and says, obviously, this sky vehicle was given the unusual name of the Eye of Horus, since the deity riding it was evidently able to watch mankind from the skies. In fact, Horus, which is only the Latin name of this god, was originally named Hor, which he spells H-R, the Egyptians not using vowels, and the literal meaning of this ancient Egyptian word is just he who flies high in the sky. And he says, besides, it is interesting to remember that the vault of heaven, that is the starry universe, was named after him, Hathor, which means the abode of Horus. He goes on to talk of different types of flying machines and mentions that we know that in ancient India, where space flight was restricted to the gods, as in Egypt, the mythical Garuda, a bird-like flying deity considered as man's earliest concept of an interplanetary vehicle, was evidently a symbolical representation of flying means of transport. And he then goes on to refer back to the Tully papyrus and then say, do you think that their strong resemblance with the biblical chariots of God, as in Psalm 68:17, described in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 1, verse 16, as flying wheels, is merely coincidental? He comes back to the Egyptian equivalent of the Garuda and Pushpaka, which in Vedic myth was the aerial chariot in which Kubera usually travelled. And he quotes, in the Ramayana, it is told how it was stolen by Ravana and later recovered by Rama. And Egyptian and Hindu legends evidently refer to the same mythical event, since we know that the Eye of Horus was also stolen by Set and later recovered by Thoth. Interesting there that you get these myths or these stories that seem to crop in different people's histories. It makes you wonder sometimes whether it's the same event, doesn't it? Anyway, I'll carry on now. The writer says, therefore it seems safe to say that in our statue the hawk symbolizes the Eye of Horus, the flying vehicle of the god, and the man, its divine occupant, who is seemingly coming out of the door, as you see, and when he refers to that, you can't see, because there is a photograph with this particular article which shows the hawk, which is about 9 foot, 10 foot tall, quite massive, and I suppose otherwise this would be a most peculiar thing, but in the lower part there is the door, and you can see a being appearing to come out. So that's something interesting. He says, such being the case, what shall we think? Is this statue a stylized image of an ancient spaceship and its pilot? Remember that in the Book of the Dead, Horus says, I leave like the sacred hawk, who flies away and rests on the forehead of Ra, which is the sun, on the prow of the boat of Nu, or Nun, which is the boundless dark void in which everything was created, in other words, cosmic space, also considered as the birthplace of all gods of Egypt. So there you are. There's a UFO sighting that goes back to, I guess, probably one of the older periods that you can actually track down some evidence like this. The only ones I can think of offhand that came possibly around that period were the Sumerian dealings with ETs and spacecraft, which I have read in some of the books by Zechariah Sitchin. So, that completes that one. I did learn towards the end of January that there was a sighting of a flotilla of UFOs after over Madrid in Spain. And with this email that I received, there was in fact a photograph, and one doesn't know how clear it was, but you can make out maybe about a dozen of these craft. And I have to say, of recent time, there does seem to be more of these multi-sightings. So that's all on the UFO front. I'm coming now to my general news, because what I like to see here and pick up is the reaction of the people to what is being done by the dark. And if we're going to bring the light to this planet, we have to be aware of what is happening, and we have to respond, and we have to try and bring these changes in. We have to help First Contact to manifest. I saw a small report today, which I received by email. I don't actually know where it originated from, but it's, I guess, something that you will see in the press if you live in the States, and that is 250 medical experts have signed a letter condemning the US for force-feeding prisoners on hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. That report evidently came out on the 10th of March. And although 250 medical experts doesn't sound very much, what I like is the idea that the people who find that objectionable have got together and been able to raise their voices by signing a letter of condemnation. And I think once these things start, they do tend to snowball. It only takes a few people to set these things off. There's been a little bit this week on the web about depleted uranium. And again, I regret I'm not quite sure where this article originated from. But I saw it in an email that came to me on the 9th of March. And they were talking about the March the 8th, 2006 edition of the CNN American Morning Program with Miles O'Brien and Soledad O'Brien. And apparently they made a startling announcement saying that on average there are 175,000 new cases of lung cancer each year in the United States. And for just the months of January and February this year, there are over 172,000 confirmed newly diagnosed cases of lung cancer. And they're saying that this is already averaging this year about six times the normal incidence of new lung cancer cases in a year. Now, the people who issued that report tried to attribute it to secondhand smoke. But the writer makes the point that secondhand smoke and cigarettes are nothing compared to being exposed to depleted uranium and particulates created by BU explosions. He says you can smoke for 30 years and not do the damage that depleted uranium can do to you in 30 days. And he says, how long does it take to get lung cancer after being exposed to depleted uranium and nanoparticulates? He says, on average, 2 to 5 years is the correct answer. And then he makes the point that we started bombing Afghanistan in October 2001, or 4.5 years ago, and that we started bombing Iraq again in March 2003, was just shy of 3 years ago. And he says the effect of those bombing attacks were registered as far away as the UK, according to the Aldermaston report, that we, being the CNN, and others released on February 19, 2006. And he says, we do not know yet what was registered in the US, because the US government is not saying, and they definitely do not want you to know. Now, I thought that was interesting again. We don't know what the outcome will be from that. But there, I think, are concerns all round now about the use of depleted uranium. And there is a fear, as in that article, that it is causing some serious illnesses. And the effect is, I don't know whether it's exactly worldwide, but you can see how far it is travelling from the area that it's used. Now, I'm looking through my papers here. I had one which came to me by email, an article written by Bernard Weiner, or Weiner, co-editor of the Crisis Papers. And this came out on March 7th, 2006. And he's saying that I'm more and more convinced that it will be the Republicans, many of them of the true conservative and realist kind, who effectively will do in the Bush administration. And he's saying that in this, I'm reminded of the behaviour of Richard Nixon when he realised that he was fast losing his middle class bourgeois base. He called it quits on the Vietnam War, and likewise on his presidency after his crimes were exposed. He's saying that, but unlike Nixon's crew, Bush and company seem willing to take the country down with them. So desperate are they to hold on to power, deplete the treasury, pay off their corporate friends, carry out their ideological revolution, and keep themselves out of the federal slammer. He says, the crimes of the Bush administration are so many and varied that none of us should be surprised by anything that might happen in the coming weeks and months. Bin Laden captured or reported killed, a US-Israeli air assault on Iran's nuclear facilities, a major terrorist attack inside the US to be followed by martial law, the announcement of a bird flu outbreak with the military placed in charge. Bernard says, I'm pretty level-headed and don't usually think in these dire terms, but these guys have backed themselves into a tight political corner and are desperate and dangerous. That's all I'm going to quote from that article, but there you are, there's someone else who's bringing to our attention what is happening. And some of that is confirmed in the messages that I've received, in as much as, if I recall correctly, it was today or yesterday, that there was, to use the term, that they are running around like crazy horses. They don't really know their time is very limited, but I suppose, like most people of the dark, they don't want to admit it, and they'll try right up to the last minute to avoid defeat. Had a memo on the 8th of March talking about the spending of the US in Iraq. Apparently, according to the Huffington Post, it's reached $5.9 billion, and that is simply the monthly expenditures. And if you add up the US commitment in Afghanistan, apparently it adds to roughly another $1 billion. So taken together, annual spending for the two wars will reach $117.6 billion for the fiscal year ending this September the 30th. And apparently that is an 18% above funding for the prior 12 months. That's all I can say from that one. But again, I think it's worth knowing, isn't it, what these wars are costing when we think of the money that I feel is being wasted and could be better used at home. I have yet another email that's been passed around relating to depleted uranium. And this was talking about the same subject. And in fact, reading it very quickly, I don't actually see anything on here that was new from the one I've just read out. So I'll quickly move on from that one to another one talking about Congress trying to ram through a bill whereby the major food producers and additive manufacturers would no longer have to tell you what they're putting in your food. Apparently, this email was passed around on the 6th of March, and the article reads that the House of Representatives will vote this week on a controversial national food uniformity labelling law that will take away local government and states' power to require food safety food labels, such as those required in California and other states, on foods or beverages that are likely to cause cancer, birth defects, allergic reactions, or mercury poisoning. And the bill would also prevent citizens in local municipalities and states from passing laws requiring that genetically engineered foods and ingredients such as Monsanto's recombinant bovine growth hormone be labeled. So this email which is circulating is asking us to please take action and send a message to your congressman in the House of Representatives and asking him to vote no. Now, that email has been circulated by a website under the name of Organic Consumers. So you might like to look that one up if you're interested. But again, it's nice to see that there is some reaction against such a bill. I have to say, speaking to you from the UK, that we have tried to go, and I think are successfully going the other way, and we are asking for even more detail to be put on food labels, and I think that's having some success. On the 7th of March, I had an email which came out of the from the website Capitol Hill Blue, and they circulated an article by Doug Thompson. Apparently, he's a writer for The Rant, and he headed it, "Bush Declares War on Freedom of the Press." And he was using many of the questionable surveillance and monitoring techniques that brought both questions and criticism to his administration. George W. Bush has launched a war against reporters who write stories unfavorable to his actions, and is planning to prosecute journalists to make examples of them in his war on terrorism. And apparently Bush recently directed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to use, and he quotes, "whatever means at your disposal," unquote, to wiretap, follow, harass, and investigate journalists who have published stories about the administration's illegal use of warrantless wiretaps, use of faulty intelligence, and anything else he deems, quote, detrimental to the war on terror. And so the article goes on a bit, but again, it's very pleasing to see people rising up against these, I think, intrusions on people's freedom of speech. And if we're not careful, it will continue to be eroded by the looks of it. So, I move on into my little news items here. I have one that goes back actually to the end of February. I don't think I read this out before, but they were talking about 27 members of the House now support an impeachment inquiry, and they said as a result of the full-page impeachment ad in newspapers, the mass demonstrations, rallies in congressional districts, and the more than 650,000 people that have joined the impeachment campaign at impeachbush.org, the political climate in the United States has changed. So there we are. I often see emails going around where people question what is happening about the impeachments. We haven't heard very much at all from Patrick Fitzgerald, but where there is a reference to his work, it would seem that the list of people that he has ready to be impeached is still valid, and we may yet expect to see something come from it. Also, at the end of February, there is apparently some evidence. It is headed as a scrapbook confessional that the Bush administration planned the Iraq attack on 9/11. Apparently there was a note written by the Department of Defense staff of Stephen Cambone on the afternoon of September 11, 2001, and it details Rumsfeld's strategy to link Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein as the culprits of the attack. And he's noting here, to make sure the message gets home, that this was written on the only hours after we were attacked on 9/11. The inference is, obviously, that they knew about 9/11, and they were already spinning the idea that these two people mentioned were the culprits. I did see an article that Michael Worldwide Newsletter was circulating, and it's not new by any means, but it was just the fact that they mentioned numbers here, and it was one that was talking about the concentration camps. Apparently there are 130 known ones, and they believe they may even number up to 600. And the ones that have been seen are ready for use after martial law has been declared. The article maintains that the concentration camps are all part of the plan to move towards a one world government. I think that report was credited to Nasara.us, so if you want to know more, you can go there and have a read. There was an interesting statement made by the Archbishop of York, Dr. John Sentamu. That was circulated by email on the 20th of February, and he launched a passionate attack on President George Bush, saying his administration's refusal to close the notorious Guantanamo Bay camp reflected a society that is heading towards George Orwell's Animal Farm. Dr. Sentamu, the Church of England second in command, urged the UN Human Rights Commission to take legal action against the US through the US courts or the International Court of Justice at The Hague should it fail to respond to a report by five UN inspectors advising that Camp Delta at Guantanamo Bay should be shut immediately because prisoners there are being tortured. There's also an item on our television news today, actually, about the forced feeding of some of the occupants in these prison camps and saying that that was illegal and it should be stopped. Now, getting to the end of my news items, which is fine. Give me a little time to get into the other messages, as I call them. Anyway, I have another one that goes back to about mid-February. The report originated in Washington on the 19th of February, and it says that the British, French and German envoys to Washington on the Sunday of that week joined the UN call for closing the unpopular US detention camp at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So there we are. It's being taken up by people in high places. It makes you wonder how much pressure needs to be put on certain people in the government to get something done about that. It's obviously causing a lot of friction and a lot of worry for people. I have a copy here of a report that came through Brian Murphy, who is the AP religion writer, and he was saying that in Porto Alegre in Brazil, a coalition of American churches sharply denounced the war in Iraq. That was on the Saturday, accusing Washington of raining down terror, and that other nations were responsible for the violence, degradation and poverty that our nation has sown. And that statement was issued at the largest gathering of Christian churches in nearly a decade, and also warned that the United States was pushing the world toward environmental catastrophe with a culture of consumption and its refusal to back international accords seeking the battle of global warming. And that's another sore point, isn't it? The lack of support for the Kyoto Agreement. Now, on our BBC radio in the UK, on the 16th of February, we heard that water supplies are so low in Somalia that children are being forced to drink their own urine. That's a horrible thought, to think that someone can be driven to do that. And it said then that 1.7 million need urgent aid, according to the charity organisation Oxfam. I think it's so sad that a tragedy of that size, with so much suffering for so many people, just does not seem to get much publicity. And they've had troubles in Somalia for quite a long time. I wonder what we are doing in the West to try and deal with that. I have another article here that was written by William Rivers Pitt, which came from the website Truth Out, and he calls it The Enemy. And he says, they called it Cyberstorm, and it was a war game exercise run last week by the Department of Homeland Security. And the war game had nothing to do with the testing the security of our shopping ports, borders, infrastructure, or airports. Cyberstorm was testing the government's ability to withstand an onslaught of information and protest from bloggers and online activists. There we are. So there is another potential attack on our freedom of speech. If we know about it, we can be aware of it and maybe do something about it. Going back to the 11th of February, I read an email then was talking about the Bush administration and its 1 billion land sales. And the report came from Washington. And apparently, on the Friday, prior to the 11th of February, he detailed its proposal to sell more than 300,000 acres of national forest. I expect they're natural as well. And other public land helped pay for rural schools in 41 states. I would still have to wonder whether you could justify stripping areas of national forests even so. There was an article going around at the very beginning of February, and I still think it's worth mentioning because it related to Cindy Sheehan's T-shirt. And apparently, referring back to an earlier incident, in 1971, the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional to arrest a man who wore a T-shirt with a rather rude word called F the Draft, and he wore that T-shirt into the courthouse. And apparently his name was Alito, and he was in the court for 45 minutes. And the result of that is we're learning that our civil liberties are already going down the toilet. Apparently, Cindy Sheehan's shirt said how many more, meaning the dead in the Iraq War. And I understand that she was cautioned or arrested for it. Well, that's incredible, isn't it? But you can't even express an opinion, if you like, a fact even, by printing it on a T-shirt. There is a site called CARE, C-A-R-E, and they circulated information saying, oh, this is a grand example of the public forcing a check and balance. And apparently a civil liberties group sued AT&T Inc. on Tuesday, that's Tuesday the 28th of January, for its alleged role in helping the National Security Agency spy on the phone calls and other communications of US citizens without warrant. Again, I mention that because it's an indication that people are on the lookout for these infringements of our liberties. And I'm pleased the more I see that people aren't prepared to sit back and accept it. Beginning of February, there was a report about Powell's former Chief of Staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, who called pre-war intelligence a hoax on the American people. apparently that must have been on the PBS programme called Now on Friday the 3rd of February. And apparently in that interview, it was mentioned that Colin Powell's former chief of staff, who Lawrence Wilkerson was, makes the startling claim that much of Powell's landmark speech to the United Nations, laying out the Bush administration's case for the Iraq war, was false. There we are, people coming out with their truth. And this is one thing that we've been told through the messages, that as these higher energies affect us on the earth, so these so-called secrets will be uncovered. In February, apparently, there was, according to Ray Land, who is on the Rumour Mill news site, that there is a reclassification of terrorism which is spreading across the US, and it was a bill just barely defeated in Oregon, which would have made you a terrorist, or could make you a terrorist, if you downloaded music, blocked traffic, or write a bad check. And it says, want to know what the punishment would have been? Read on. Well, I won't read on very far, but he's saying that all of the offences which he mentioned would be punishable by life in prison unless you agree to attend a forced labour camp for 25 years of enforced labour. And can you believe that? It just seems so unreal, doesn't it? I mean, can it be true? There we are. I think that is all I've got. Yes, that's all I've got on the general news. And now I'll come to what I call the other messages, which are those which are of the light, which I want to try and give a little bit more time to, because now I've got through most of my backlog of material after the short break we had. So one I wanted to mention in particular was an article circulated from a website called thedream.com. It was a very interesting one. It was talking about these super psychic kids and the amazing powers of new children. I can't possibly read it all out because it's the best part of a two-page article, but what was of interest was apparently that in 1974, the Chinese government discovered over 100,000 children who had extraordinary psychic powers. Children who, when blindfolded, could see with either their ears, nose, mouth, tongue, armpits, hands or feet. Apparently, in one test conducted by Omni magazine, researchers randomly ripped a page from a stack of books, and when the page was crumpled into a small ball and placed in the armpit of a Chinese child, they were able to read perfectly every word on the screwed-up ball of paper. Apparently, they can also read the screwed-up ball under their feet, in their ears, and even by chewing it up. And they say another remarkable feat that over 5,000 young Chinese have demonstrated publicly is the passing of a solid object through another solid object. Apparently, the child randomly selects a glass bottle of pills, which is sealed in its original plastic wrap and then placed on a large bare table. And suddenly, the pills inside the sealed bottle pass through the glass and appear on the table. And they say that the child can also take a coin, put it on the table, and the coin will pass into the sealed bottle. And a young girl named Yong Li can remove cigarettes from inside a cardboard box without touching the box. And one boy can control mechanical watches, making them run fast or slow. And another can make watch hands move quickly around the watch face without touching them. And so this article goes on. It's extremely interesting. Talks about a 12-year-old girl, Hu Lian, who can see inside a person's body. I guess you'd call that X-ray vision, and that's maybe not quite so unusual. And there's another young Chinese girl who demonstrated her ability to influence live rosebuds that over 1,000 audience members were holding in their own hands, and with a silent wave of her hand, the 1,000 rosebuds would slowly open into fully blossomed roses before the eyes of the astonished audience. Now, if that doesn't tell you that the indigo children or the crystal children, or whatever you like to call them, are with us, nothing else will. And I think they're showing us the type of skills that we too will gradually acquire as our vibrations are lifted up in preparation for ascension. But what I do like most of all is apparently in China, they do encourage the children to develop these skills. And I regret to say that in some countries in the West, we possibly do or tend to do the opposite. I rather than trying to prove their abilities, we try to disprove them, which is extremely negative. There was another report which came from the PRweb.com, and that was talking about the evidence of children's UFO and extraterrestrial encounters, which was to be presented at a United Nations affiliated conference in Montreal. And this information came about from a lady whose name I'm searching to find here. I think is, yes, Mary Rodwell, who apparently is amongst a number of academic scientists and politicians, such as the former Canadian Minister of Defence, the Honourable Paul Hellyer, who are supporting her core paradigm, shifting views about life in the universe, and that some UFOs are extraterrestrial spaceships. And she apparently was a former registered nurse who worked with hundreds of clients, including many children, and she will be revealing evidence of their encounters with extraterrestrials at the beginning of an upcoming conference, which I've said is in Montreal, and that will be this year on May the 5th to the 14th, and it's being held at the 31st annual conference of the International Institute for Integral Human Sciences. So that's interesting, isn't it? At long last, we are giving attention to the evidence of ETs and contact with them, but in a nice way, not in one that tries to cause fear or panic. So I think that's nice. That's a step in the right direction. Now, looking at a list here of various websites, and I see they include one of my favourites, Dr. Horowitz, who explain the CIA's role in the anthrax mailings, which I think I've mentioned before, so I won't go into that. So I'll leave that one for the moment. There was quite a long message that was circulated by Chad Ugrinchik, who has got the article from the Christ Michael's GlobalSpiritualNetwork.com. And he circulated this one, which was originally given on Friday the 24th of February, and this was from Sananda, and he was talking about something they call the God event, which was being discussed among light workers, and Sananda wanted to address the issue, as he said, that it pertains to on Earth as well as the cosmic responsibility of the event and the ramifications it will have on the entire universe. And he says there is an enormous amount of energy being forced upon the Earth at this time, and it can be likened to a pressure cooker of sorts. And do not be dismayed by the experiences that you may be going through, and that the issues at hand are in need of this intense flow of energy from the cosmos at this time, and all are requested to bump up in the process. And he says, we understand that this can cause extreme feelings of unease. Please know that these feelings will be abated shortly. And he says, you will only need to feel these intense energies during the beginning of what you term the God event. And that this event is a world of change encrypted in the tiny atoms of energy that are being transmuted at this time. So he goes on to tell us the various ways in which we might notice it. And I think that's again, interesting, we often hear about the energies that are coming to us from outside, but there is an article in which Sananda is, shall we say, throwing some light on it. And he urges us to all at this time to firmly plant ourselves on the ground and prepare for a thrust of great change. And the forward movement caused by this thrust of source energy will be the monumental in scope, and will have a far wide reaching effect. So I'll leave that one there. There's a wonderful message from Archangel Michael that came through Celia Fent. I do love Archangel Michael's messages. And he was saying what a wonderful time to be on the planet Earth. And I certainly agree with that. And he was talking about the field of love and the fact that at this time we're experiencing two significant waves of energy that are working together to raise the collective frequency or vibration of the planet. And he says that the first is the Sirian blue star energy that is being directed to the planet through the sun with the purpose of activating the galactic light body geometry. And the second is what we call the quantum event, a wave of galactic energy that is creating what we will term a photonic anomaly field on your planet, and that these waves of galactic light constitute a field of pure love on a new octave of experience for planet Earth, and that our galactic light bodies are being activated now as a collective, so that you might experience and receive the transmission of this wave of light energy from the great central sun or galactic center. And he says this field is powerful. It is changing the very structure of your reality on a quantum level, but in miraculous and wonderful ways. Did we not say last month that everything is changing? Indeed, we mean it literally. The waves of love are transforming the planet, creating a possibility that supports the highest expressions of love and planetary collective. And he says, now, beloved souls, you'll begin to see real changes on the Earth. Love will show the way. The field of love will begin to guide people to express only their highest and best potential. Now, it clearly is a longer message, but that is the part I wanted to read out. And again, I think it's noticeable, at least I've read it in one or two messages, that the theme of some of them concerning the incoming energy is that it will bring us, or enable us, or cause us to express only our highest and best potential. And if you wonder sometimes how the changes that we seek can come into being, maybe we're getting part of the answer there. We don't have to do all of it ourselves, but once we have the desire and the will, we certainly get quite a lot of help. I'll just quote from a couple of Nancy Tate's messages of recent times, although these go back to January. And she had one on the 20th from Hatton, and he said that the battle which we're in is waged by the dark alone. The light is what it is. That's interesting, isn't it? It's a statement that you can meditate on. Interesting one, I think. Then on the day before, Nancy had a wake-up call from being who simply said, I am, and it mentioned that they or he will give forth the light that shows the way to the promised land, and that we have created a brand new day of light. Interesting. Clearly one needs to read the whole message to get the full effect or understanding of that one. And I see I haven't got apparently too much time left, so I will conclude by mentioning another early February message which came from the Violet Council of Light. That came from Tikkeli, as I call it, or Tikkeli, and it was saying that you are the ones you have been waiting for. And for some of you, this is a difficult thing to accept as your truth. You wish for someone to rescue you from life's difficulties. It is saying that we wait right along with you until you show some sign of willingness to define or design your journey. Then, dear ones, you shall have all the assistance you need or could wish for to aid you in manifesting that which you have requested of us in that moment. And that, I think, neatly ties in with the earlier message, again tells us that we first have to show the desire or the will, and then the rest will happen. Well, thank you everyone for being with me. I will end my program there. I gather that next week I will be going live. But I will look forward to that. So thank you for being with me. God bless you all.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.